We know this is a song that the Lord gave Moses, that this nation Israel were to sing. We're going to go on a few verses tonight. We have a contrast in what we read last week. In verse 4, we read what God is. He's our rock. He was Israel's rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment, or they're true and just. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he. This is the one that chose them. This is the one that has led them these 40 years through the wilderness journey. His work is perfect. I like that. I know when I sew a garment for myself or anyone else, I like to have my work perfect, but because I have sin in the flesh, I'm not perfect, so therefore I can't have a perfect garment. But God's work is perfect. And I thank the Lord that there will be no flaws, there will be no blemishes, the seams will be straight, there'll be no snags. His work is perfect. And this is what they were to sing. Every time they sang this song, they would sing, his work is perfect. And then we go into the fifth verse. Let's read verses 5 through 9. They have corrupted themselves. Their spot is not the spot of his children. They are a perverse and crooked generation. Do ye thus requite the Lord, O foolish people and unwise? Is not he thy father that hath bought thee? Hath he not made thee and established thee? Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he shall show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee. When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. For the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of his inheritance. They here in this verse 5 is the nation Israel. Verse 4, Moses is teaching them this song. And in this verse 4, he is the rock. The rock. His work is perfect. He's a God that is just and true. Then they come back down and they have to recognize who they are. They have corrupted themselves. This was their own doing, due to their rebellious hearts. He knew it would happen, but this was their own doing. The word corrupted, and we've had this before, it means to destroy one's way, that is to corrupt or pervert it, and hence to act wickedly. Have you ever heard the term corrupt business, a corrupt government? They're there to destroy someone. And this is what it is. Israel, because of their rebellious heart, corrupted themselves. This was Israel's own choice due to the unbelief which they had deep-seated in their hearts. God knew this. God knew the rebellion. He knew the unbelief when he brought them out of Egypt before they ever even left. Well, they'd been released. Let's turn to Exodus 14. And they did. Let's turn to Exodus 14. Exodus 14. They've been released out of Egypt. We're going to begin with the 10th verse. Exodus 14 and the 10th verse. This was from the very beginning, but God knew this. But look what they begin to manifest right away. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. This was the first murmuring in their wilderness journey. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Plain old unbelief. Here they complained for the taskmasters. But Moses was just a vessel that God used to release them out of Egypt. Why are they blaming Moses? He was there. They could see him. They couldn't see God. They didn't have the faith to say, well, God, are you there? He was from the very beginning. Then, let's turn to Numbers 25. Keeping in mind the thought that they corrupted themselves. And I want you to notice a few of the words here in these first three verses. Numbers 25, and we'll begin with the first verse. And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredoms with the daughters of Moab, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. And the people did eat, and bowed down to their gods. And Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Here, they began to let down. Oh, it's not so bad if we spent some time with these Moabites. Let's just go sit down with them. Well, and Israel abode. By them abiding there, Israel began to give up their separation unto God. They sat down with them. The people began to commit. When you begin something, it's usually to do something. And this is what Israel did. That the people began to commit whoredoms with the daughters of Moab. Then notice just the succession, the steps downward here. And they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. And the people did eat. Notice, oh, they not only sat down, but they ate with them. And then they bowed down to their gods. Oh, it won't hurt just this once, but look what happened. Then they joined, or they yoked or linked to themselves unto Baal Peor. What we might think is a very innocent thing can get us, notice the reaction God had. And the Lord said unto Moses, take all the leaders of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. This is no light matter with the Lord. They allowed themselves to be seduced by one of their own enemies. Moab was an enemy of God. So was Ammon, so was Moab. All these countries on the borders of Israel were their enemies. They allowed themselves to be seduced by their enemies. Moab worshipped Molech. Remember what Molech, it was a god that they built a fire within, and then they offered their young babies in the arms of this god. I had a thought, it's the company we keep. What is the company that we keep? Is it to spiritual edification, or is it to corruption? Let's turn to Galatians 6, and this is what Mom brought out in the song, and what she was saying before the lesson started tonight. Galatians 6, and let's begin with verse 7. Be not deceived, God is not mocked or fooled. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Then we go on in verse 5 in Deuteronomy 32. They have corrupted themselves. And notice what is said then. Their spot is not the spot of his children. This spot is a stain or a blemish. And this has an allusion to the marks which idolaters inscribed on their foreheads or their arms with paint or other substances in various colors or shapes according to the idol that they worshipped. They were God's people, but yet they had a stain or a blemish of an idolatrous worshiper. They didn't by that show that they were not his children. Their character or conduct was such that if anyone saw these, they would not recognize them as a worshiper of the living God. Can you imagine that this is what God's people are doing today? They'd rather worship something they can see than worship the living God. What kind of an example are they setting to those that don't know God? oh, well, they're an idol worshiper. Something here. They're not worshiping the living God. I would like to turn now to 1 Corinthians 10. As has been brought out so many times, what this nation Israel went through is for our learning. Everything that they went through, this song that they are learning from Moses, is very, very important. It's an example to us. 1 Corinthians 10, and I would like to read the 11th verse. Now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages are come. It was written down for us to learn by. They experienced it. Why should we have to experience it when they did? They have written it down for us. We should learn by what we read. Can it be seen? If we're a worshiper of God, can it be seen through our manner of life, our conversation of life? Can people see that we're not of this world, that we're strangers and pilgrims? We don't act like everybody else because we're not of this world, and we can't fit in. We're squares, and squares can't fit into round holes. We don't fit into this world if we're truly a worshiper of God. Let's turn to Ephesians 5. If God and Jesus are first in our lives, it's going to show. We're going to be different than everybody else. Ephesians 5, and this was written to Paul, written by Paul to Ephesian saints, beginning in the first verse. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints. Neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words. And that can happen. For because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be ye not therefore partakers or co-participants with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now ye are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Have a note here that our walk as we walk in the light reproves them. Let's look at 1 Thessalonians 5:22. Our walk is being watched. Are we going to be a representative of what God wants us to be? 1 Thessalonians 5 and the 22nd verse. Abstain or refrain or to hold oneself from all appearance of evil. And this is what the children of Israel were not doing. They were joining in. They were becoming one with them. I remember in Leviticus, we read many a time that they were not to become like the Egyptians. They were not to become like the Canaanites. They were to be a separated people, and that's what we're to be, a separated people unto God. Let's look at these words. They are a perverse and crooked generation. This is what they're going to be singing about themselves. They have corrupted themselves. Their spot is not the spot of his children. They are a perverse and crooked generation. Perverse. And in the Strong's, he gave the definitions of distorted, deceitful, and false. Brother Wilson, in his dictionary, I really enjoyed the definition that he gave for perverse. He said, this word expresseth the character of a man who walketh in a double way. And I think of James 1:8. A double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. and he doth not keep steadily to the end and rule of upright conduct. It is one who windeth this way or that way, as best suiteth his own selfish, bad views, and maketh virtue itself subservient to vice. Let's look with that in Proverbs 19:1. I appreciate the fact that the Lord calls things as they are, that he does not color coat them, or candy coat them. He tells them exactly as they are. Proverbs 19:1. Better is the poor, the destitute, that walketh in his integrity, than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool. Let's turn to Proverbs 28. Proverbs 28, we'll read the 6th verse. Better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he be rich. Then down in verse 18. Whoso walketh uprightly shall be saved, but he that is perverse in his ways shall fall at once. And this perverse in both of these verses means double-minded, to make crooked, or is deceitful. Then the word crooked in this verse, they are a perverse and crooked generation. This crooked means crafty, perverse, or twisted. And this is what God is saying that this nation is. This is what they will sing. And as they sing this song, they will realize that's them. In verse 6, the second generation has been brought through the wilderness, and the Lord knew that they would become idolatrous like all the nations round about them. He knew that, but they experienced that for us. We can learn by what they went through. Now in verse 6, do ye thus requite the Lord, O foolish and foolish people and unwise? Is not he thy father that bought thee? Hath he not made thee and established thee? Think of what the Lord has done for them. This requite here means, is this how you repay the Lord? Is this how you recompense him? Is this how you reward him? And the meaning of foolish. And this is, foolish means stupid or wicked. Can you just hear them singing this? Do you thus repay the Lord, O you stupid and wicked people, and unwise are those that are not wise? They showed Jehovah shameless ingratitude for all that he had done and was going to do by allowing themselves. They allowed themselves to become seduced. Therefore, they became perverse and they became crooked. Have you ever seen anyone show shameless ingratitude? Not thankful for a thing that's been provided for them? Oh, it's expected of me. It's due me. No. The Lord brought them out of Egypt. He chose them. What Jehovah had done for them was not mere peanuts. What he had done for them was more than only the new creation can take in. What Jehovah had done for this nation. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 7. We've read this many a time, but to really understand what the Lord did to this nation. Deuteronomy 7, beginning with verse 6. For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself. Not to anybody else, but to himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. This nation he was choosing was not going to be a run-of-the-mill nation. It was going to be his nation. It's going to be up and above all the rest of the nation. And that will happen at the end of the 7 years. That nation will no longer be the tail. It will be the head. Verse 7, the Lord did not set his love on you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any people, for ye were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, this was the basis And because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. It says here in Deuteronomy, is not he, speaking of God, is not he thy father? Their father. A father is one, is the progenitor and originator. He was the father of this nation. He was the one, was the progenitor and the originator of this nation, Israel. Let's look at Isaiah 63. Isaiah 63 and the 16th verse. And this is the remnant of Israel, the third that will be brought through the fire, right? Doubtless thou art our father, though Abraham be ignorant of us, and Israel acknowledge us not. Thou, O Lord, art our Father, our Redeemer. Thy name is from everlasting. We have the word, is he not thy Father that hath bought thee? This word bought means redeemed or recovered a possession that belongs to him. To redeem means to set free. To redeem something, a price has to be paid. And that price was paid for this nation. Let's look back at Exodus 12. It looked forward to what Jesus was going to do for us. Exodus 12, we know this was in preparation for the Passover, when the death angel would pass over, when the night that the firstborn would be slain. But it all looks forward to Jesus. In verse 3 of chapter 12 of Exodus, speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the 10th day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb. And we want to note, it was a lamb. Remember, Christ, Jesus Christ is the lamb slain before the foundation of the world, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for an house. And if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb. And it speaks of our apprehension of Christ. Your lamb shall be without blemish. Wasn't Christ without blemish? A male of the first year. And that's in the fullness of strength, ye shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats, and ye shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts, and on the upper doorpost of the houses wherein they shall eat it. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire. This speaks of the atoning death of Jesus Christ. And unleavened bread he had no sin. With bitter herbs shall they eat it. That was the price that had to be paid. A lamb had to die for each firstborn in Egypt, in the land of Goshen, so that that nation Israel could be taken out, could be released. But the price had to be paid. Let's turn to Exodus 15. Yes, Exodus 15 and 16th verse. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of thine arm they shall be as still as a stone till they pass over. O Lord, till the people pass over which thou hast purchased. Let's look at in Isaiah 11:11 regarding the end time. Isaiah 11:11, and it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand against the second time to recover or purchase the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and from Pathros, from Cush and from Elam, from Shinar and from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. They're going to be brought back. He's going to gather his people all back that he had purchased. Now, this word made
Is he not thy father that hath bought thee? Hath he not made thee? This maid, God used Joseph. Joseph, let's look at Genesis 45. All this that happened to Joseph, Mom's been bringing it out on Wednesday night. Wednesday night. God ordained all of that so that that nation, God made it. Genesis 45 will begin with verse 5. Now therefore be not grieved, he's speaking to his brothers. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be earing or harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve, or to make you a remnant, to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. If they wouldn't have sold Joseph down into Egypt, there wouldn't have been a nation. Let's look over in chapter 46. We know that Jacob came down to Egypt. Chapter 46, verses 26 and 27. And all the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, besides Jacob's sons' wives, all the souls were 66. And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 70. These were the 70 souls that began that nation of Israel. Then we read in Deuteronomy 32, and established thee. God is the one that bought them, made them, and established them. This established means to stand, to be erect, to stand firm, to be prepared. It was God who made this nation, these 70 souls, into a nation. And it would be through this nation that God would send his son into the world to die for sin. Jesus came. He was an Israelite. He was a Jew. He came through that nation. We read in the first chapter of Matthew how we start with Abraham. He came through the line of Abraham. He came through the nation Israel. Let's look at Micah, the 5th verse. Micah 5, and we'll read the 2nd verse. And we want to note what it says. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me, that is to be ruler in Israel. This is Jesus Christ, whose goings forth have been from of old, from ancient times. We know in John 1:1, God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit have always been. The Word was with God, the Word was God. Okay, let's look at verses 7 and 8. Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee. When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. Everything revolves around this nation. The origin of Israel's birth was a well-known fact. It was no secret. Those that went before could be asked, and they could tell the generations that followed how it happened. I'm sure they told the story many times of how those 70 souls went down because of the famine, how Moses led them out. It was a well-known fact. When the Most High, and this is El Elyon, divided to the nations their inheritance. I would like to look at Genesis 14. Melchizedek was a priest to El Elyon, the Most High God. Brother Schofield, he has in his notes regarding El Elyon, and we go over to Deuteronomy 32:8. The Most High God, El Elyon, is possessor of heaven and earth. As possessor, Okay, appropriate, okay. The Lord Jehovah, in Brother Schofield's notes, the Lord Jehovah is known to a Gentile king, Melchizedek, by the name Most High God. He's a Gentile, is the priest of El Elyon, and his distinctive character is Most High God as possessor of heaven and earth. Appropriately to this Gentile knowledge of God by his name Most High, we read that the Most High divided to the nations, or to the Gentiles, their inheritance when he separated the sons of Adam, and we read that in verse 8. As possessor of heaven and earth, it was the prerogative of the Most High to distribute the earth among the nations according to whatever principle he chose. And this is the principle that we're reading here in Deuteronomy 32:8. Yes. We read that when El Elyon divided, or he distributed to the nations their inheritance. I would like to go back to Genesis 10. We see the three sons of Noah and the different directions that they took in the inhabited earth at that time. Mom had given me a Bible atlas, and if you want to look at it after study, it shows the areas that the ancestors of Shem, Japheth, and Ham all went to. And we want to notice that Arphaxad, the one that Abraham came from, is right down there in Ur of the Chaldees. The brother Jameson Fawcett Brown had a real good commentary on what this was. In Genesis 10, we read in verse 5 regarding the sons of Japheth. By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided. They went to the coastlands. Then in verses 6 to 19, we read of where the sons of Ham went. And what caught my eye was in verse 15, and Canaan. And it lists all the ites that we have read here in Deuteronomy. Then it goes on down in verse 19, and the border of the Canaanites was from Zidon, as thou comest to Gear and to Gaza, as thou goest, and to Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboam, even unto Lasha. Those were all in the Jordan Valley. We have the area that the Canaanites went to. Okay? Then in verses 20 to 30, we have where the children of Shem went. They were of the children of Eber. Eber means Hebrew. The children of Shem were just Hebrews. They were ones passing through. They were pilgrims and strangers. Genesis 10. Brother Jameson Fawcett Brown, he says, the dispersion of mankind took place in an orderly manner, according to their families and language, each family being guided by the secret overruling providence of God to the country they were destined to inherit. In this heaven-directed distribution of lands, the posterity of Canaan were located in the country of that name. The divine proprietor having eventually assigned it to the children of Israel. And when the corruptions of the former had increased to such an height that their iniquity was full, and we'll read this in Genesis 15, God interposed by his judgments to exterminate them and make way for the children of Israel to have that land. Let's look at Genesis 15. This was the land that God wanted the nation Israel to have. And this is when God made the contract or the covenant with Abraham. This is the Abrahamic covenant. We will read in verse 16 right now, but in the fourth generation they shall come hither again for the iniquity of the Amorites. And if you recall from chapter 10, the Amorites were one of those ites. They were very wicked. For the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. In the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land. That land that was Canaan. That land, that little strip of land that belonged to those ites. God intended for Israel to have that. From the river Euphrates unto the great river, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites and the Kenizzites and the Cadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Rephaims, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Girgashites, and the Jebusites, all of that. And we know that Israel is going to have from Dan to Beersheba, from the Mediterranean clear over to the river Euphrates. That was God ordained. When he separated the sons of Adam, God intended for them to have that. Now let's turn to Genesis 11. I was looking into this and I enjoyed it. Genesis 11, Abraham, he came, if you read the genealogy, came from Arphaxad. In Genesis 11, verses 10 to 26, we see the origin of Abraham and Nahor, his brother Nahor, over in verse 26. And Terah lived 70 years and begat Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. We know Haran died. All that was left of Shem was Abraham and Nahor. Out of Abraham came Isaac and Jacob. Out of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came Rebekah, and that is found in Genesis 24:24. And then Leah and Rachel came of that same line out of Nahor in Genesis 28 verses 1 and 2. Abraham and Nahor. Now, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. El Elyon, this is the possessor of heaven and earth. This word set means he established, or he fixed, or he settled the boundaries. El Elyon, the God, most high God, he did this. He knew what he would give to the children of Israel, as verse 9 says, for the Lord's portion is his people, and this is Israel as a nation. Portion here means that God allotted to himself this people of Israel for him to protect, him to care for. Let's look at Jeremiah 10. This wasn't left to chance. God specifically gave Israel the land that they are to have. That's why it doesn't belong to anyone but Israel. Jeremiah 10 and the 16th verse. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former, or the fashioner of all things. And Israel is the rod, or the measuring rod, of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. We find this in Jeremiah 15:19. Here, back in the 10th verse, Jeremiah is contrasting God and idols. In the 51st chapter of Jeremiah, Jeremiah is contrasting God with the power of religious Babylon. In verse 19 of Jeremiah 51, the portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the fashioner of all things, and Israel is the rod, or the measuring rod, of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name, Jehovah Tsebaoth. We read here, for the Lord's portion in Deuteronomy 32, for the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of his inheritance, or his possession. Jacob here, we know, is the supplanter. We know how he supplanted Esau. Let's turn to Psalms 105. We'll begin with the 6th verse. Psalm 105:6. O ye seed of Abraham his servant, ye children of Jacob his chosen, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are all in the earth. He hath remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, which covenant he made with Abraham and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law unto Israel for an everlasting covenant, saying, unto thee will I give the land of Canaan, the lot of your inheritance, when they were but a few men in number, yea, very few, and strangers in it. Now I would like to go skip down to verse 42 of this same psalm. For he remembered his holy promise and Abraham his servant, and he brought forth his people with joy and his chosen with gladness, and gave them the lands of the heathen, and they inherited the labor of the people, that they might observe his statutes and keep his laws. Praise ye the Lord. Jacob is the lot, or this lot here means is the measuring rod. Everyone else is measured by Israel. Israel is to be the head. That nation is going to be the one. They're going to come to Israel, to Jerusalem, not just to Israel, but they're going to come to Jerusalem. And during the millennium, they're going to come for the Feast of Tabernacles. And if they don't, the rain's going to be stopped. The Lord won't let rain in the land that is not represented there. That's how much Israel means to the Lord. It's his inheritance. He chose that nation. It's his. And I pray for those nations, though they will be instruments to discipline them, discipline Israel, God's going to take care of them when the disciplining is over.